Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Michael Bender, author of A Manager's Guide to Project Management. Learn how to apply best practices. Hi, on behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Michael Bender, author of A Manager's Guide to Project Management, Learn How to Apply Best Practices. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Michael Bender, founder and CEO of Ally Business Developers, shares with us his insights on how executives should approach project management in order to enhance the alignment and accountability to their organization's vision, mission, goals, and values. So, without any further delay, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Mike Bender, author of A Manager's Guide to Project Management, Learn How to Apply Best Practices, and founder and CEO of Ally Business Developers, a consortium of world-class business, organizational, and professional development experts. Mike's leadership and project and program management experience contributed to projects including the Hubble Space Telescope, NEXRAD, the Next Generation Weather Radar, and air traffic control systems for the United States, the United Kingdom, and Taiwan. He is an American Management Association speaker and guest speaker at DePaul University and the Project Management Institute. Mike, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Well, thank you, Nathan. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to your audience.
I am thrilled to have you on the show. As we talked earlier, it's great to have a fellow PMP on the show, a first time for that. But, you know, I can hardly imagine a book that is so well aligned to Strategy-Driven's goal of providing executives and managers with the tools that they can go and use to enhance their organization's alignment and accountability. So I have been just eager to have you on the show, and I was thrilled to receive your book. To start our interview with, I'd like to ask what quantitative and qualitative benefits you've seen organizations realize after they've put your best practices into effect?
Well, thanks, first of all, for the compliment. And yes, that is one of the primary objectives of the book is to achieve that alignment. Mm-hmm. As I'm sure with many of your clients, Nathan, I have non-disclosures with some of the top ones, but there's a couple I can share with you.
Okay.
For example, I was brought in by the city of Tallahassee's IT department and later also went over and helped the state of Florida. One of the areas that they were having difficulty with is IT department of a government agency, as new elections would occur, they would have different people in charge of them and taking their objectives and changing them every several years. So as new officials would come in or new political hot potato would spring up, mm-hmm. they would abandon their existing projects and have to go off in another direction.
Sure, that constant churn and change.
Right. Now, in working with the groups, what I did was we finally concluded that their key objective was to satisfy not necessarily the politicians in power at the moment, but really the people of the state of Florida and the city of Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly those politicians are key stakeholders, but we also realize that their primary goal is also to satisfy those same people. So what we established there was the department would establish objectives specifically targeted to satisfy the needs of the state of the people of the state of Florida, and then work with the politicians to demonstrate how those would benefit their own constituents. And that way they could have long-term projects that would provide great benefit to the taxpayers of Florida and the city of Tallahassee. And that worked quite well.
Okay. So these objectives really had sustainability or staying power to them then?
Correct. By properly defining their long-term clients and making sure that their objectives, their projects, were aligned to meet their clients' needs.
Okay. All right. Well,
now on, on the corporate side, there's another excellent example where we have a medical manufacturing company that makes large-scale medical equipment.
Sure.
Such as MRIs or CTs. And this equipment is made overseas and was it would be brought in, floated on a boat, and put on a flatbed and show up at a hospital. Now, when you buy an MRI or CT, this is specialized equipment, so the room actually has to be constructed for the equipment. And frequently, the equipment was showing up, and the room wouldn't be ready. Well, I got a $1.5 million donut sitting on a loading dock, nowhere to put it.
Sure.
So this company had warehouses all over the place and would have to ship the equipment there and store it for a while. And so you have the interest of the equipment. You have the warehouse costs. You have multiple shipping and multiple riggers to bring the equipment to and from the hospitals. And one of the problems we found when they brought me in was that their projects needed some, their project managers needed some better understanding of basic concepts of project management, but their larger problem was that the company was primarily process-driven, and these, of course, are projects. So we had to find a way to integrate their project management with their business processes.
Okay.
Once we did that, we were able to bring their primary metric, which was room being ready when the shipment equipped, from as low as 62% up to 93% in less than a year, saving them some $8 million a year.
That is phenomenal. That is absolutely phenomenal. Well, with all of those benefits just sitting out there waiting for them, you know, I can imagine that some of our executive and manager listeners right now are wondering, how can I go out and create this kind of alignment with my organization's vision, mission, goals, and values? Mike, conceptually, what's the process or method these leaders would use to help create greater organizational alignment within their own companies?
Well, Nathan, conceptually, the process is pretty simple, and one which is actually well known to certainly you as a PMP and most project managers. As you know, in projects, we have a tool called a breakdown structure. For you listeners who may not be familiar with this, a breakdown structure simply takes a large thing and breaks it down into its smaller components. So, for example, if we were to do a breakdown structure for a car, we might break it down into its engine, drivetrain, its frame, its suspension, and its various other components. Put it all together, you have a completed car. As you know, in project management, one of the most prevalent constructs is called a work breakdown structure, where we take a large unit of work and decompose it down into smaller units of work. So if we're designing a system, for example, we might have a work package that is designing the input module, another for designing the database module, another for designing the human interface. Now, what we do at the organizational level is we take the same basic concept and we apply it to the goals and objectives. So in our sophisticated project environments, we have what's called a goals breakdown structure. Now, here what we do is we take the organizational objectives of a particular project. So, for example, if we're making cell phones and we want to enhance a new cell phone for the new model year, we might have business objectives such as increasing the market share by 10%, making sure it's ready for the holiday season, and keeping gross margins at least above 25%, just to pick a few simple numbers.
Okay.
We can take these objectives and decompose them down into smaller objectives, which is what project managers would call requirements. So the market share, for example, in order to increase that, a savvy product marketing manager would have to determine what features, functions, and characteristics the phone would have to achieve that market share. Gross margin would break down into the cost components of the unit. And so as a project manager, we know what the cost structure is, we know what features and functions it has to have, and all we have to do is achieve those lower-level goals in order to achieve the business goals. Now, in the book, we had to take that to an even higher level.
Okay.
So we start with the familiar constructs, which you just mentioned, the shared vision statement, the mission statement, the value statements, what I call in the book the organization definition statements. And we decompose those down just the same way. What you end up with there is essentially the strategic plan of the company. Now, what a lot of senior managers and portfolio managers fail to link is that the strategic plan really consists of two key elements. One is the business objectives the organization is trying to achieve, and the other one is the suite of projects and programs designed specifically to achieve those objectives. So by doing this, what you have is you have a clear link between the projects, the strategic plan, and the organizational objectives as we've defined them, what I call in the value in the book value tracks.
So yes.
You can actually trace these up and down the organization.
Okay.
To a point where you can walk up to an electrical engineer, ask him why he picked a particular amplifier design, and be able to track that all the way back up to some strategic plan. Planning objective.
Yeah. It gives you a very clear vision all the way from the lowest part of the organization looking upward all the way up to the organization's vision and goals.
Correctly. And
yeah.
The other advantage is I can also track them down. So as an executive, I know what kinds of goals I have to establish and disseminate, and then the next tier down can take those goals, decompose it to their layer, so they can actually manage the organization at all layers of the hierarchy.
Yes. This reminds me of a story that I've heard told time and again. I can't say if it's true or not, but it's a story of John F. Kennedy going through NASA, and he's introduced to a janitor, and he asks the janitor what he's doing. And the janitor's response is, "I'm helping to put a man on the moon," because he understood what his role in the organization was and how it contributed to NASA's vision at that time, which was, as the president had stated, to put a man on the moon and return him safely to Earth.
That's a perfect anecdote for exactly what we're describing. That's great.
Well, Mike, you know, circumstances change, both internally and externally. And so I get asked often, we have a portfolio of projects.
Right.
How or with what frequency should we review these and rebalance this portfolio of projects given some internal and external circumstance changes? And how do I time that with my long range and my annual business planning?
That is a tough question, especially in the current economic situation. And what I'll do is let me provide the normal standard answer I provide with that, and let's look at the current situation.
Okay.
When done right, when done by experienced, skilled senior managers, the organization definition statements should be fairly stable despite economic, geosocial, geopolitical situations.
Okay.
So, for example, let's take a well-known, well-organized organization, Toyota, just for an example.
Sure, sure.
I would be surprised if they've really changed their organizational structure significantly over the last 2 or 3 years. Now, I'm sure their portfolio has changed, but probably not significantly. They've probably put a few projects on hold due to a cash crunch.
Mm-hmm.
Staying in the same arena, I am sure that right now General Motors is overhauling virtually everything it thinks and does.
Yes.
So as we, if we've designed the company correctly and we have our vision, mission, definition statements well established and the way we approach business well established, and that should be fairly stable for a long period of time. Now, as we descend the value tracks, as we go down in detail, it can become more volatile.
Okay.
So, as I indicated, I'm sure Toyota has adjusted some of its strategic plan, whereas General Motors might be overhauling all of its.
Okay. All right.
Now, kind of as a general rule, if I would generally review it at least on a quarterly basis. And the reason for that is you don't want any surprises. If you do it on a quarterly basis, even if you have a stable portfolio, you'll be able to see trends, and you can be able to make minor adjustments relatively quickly. If you let it go too long before reviewing it, then you may have substantial changes, which can be very detrimental to the organization. Smaller organizations and organizations going under extreme economic strife, as many are doing right now, perhaps on a monthly basis.
So really there's a balance then between responsiveness to circumstances and conditions and stability.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Mike, the next question I have is still on the same theme of rebalancing. But it's the definition of the corporate portfolio. And my question is this, is when an executive team is looking at their strategic plan and the projects, should they also be looking at their core operations as well, instead of just looking at what I think many of them call projects or initiatives?
Oh, absolutely, Nathan. This is critical and one of the key aspects of the book. Look, what's a project? A project takes an idea and turns it into reality. That's what projects do.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody has a great idea for a product. Somebody has to take that idea and actually turn it into a manufacturing line and distribution and provide raw materials. And it's a project that does that. Or projects may be used to do a process improvement. So I want to increase the efficiency of my payroll system. Well, doing that is a project as well. Ultimately, the project's results become an integral part of the business operations, and many of the ideas that spawn projects come out of research. So projects have to integrate both with the innovation part of the business, the research part of the business, as well as general operations. Now, that's just on the business flow side. Additionally, the projects are done by people, the same people that you would have doing operations. So as you increase the number of projects, you're absorbing more and more people into the project universe. So you now have both of these to contend with. What I did in the book is actually address both of these individually. So, for example, I present tools to successfully integrate the research side of the business with projects, as well as showing tools on how to balance resources, not only from projects and across projects, but also with projects, operations, and research. So all three absolutely need to be integrated in order to have a smooth business operation.
Okay. And one last question on rebalancing.
Sure.
In A Manager's Guide to Project Management, you mention the ongoing evaluation of projects so that an organization can identify those projects that are no longer going to offer sufficient value return back to the organization, and so those should be discontinued. So my question is how should the criteria or the threshold for discontinuing a project be defined? And what I'm thinking of is, depending on where we get maybe our economic indicators from, there might be some differences, or some economic indicators just fluctuate, some more regularly than others. How do we allow for that? Is it a hard threshold? Do we have kind of threshold bands? How do we establish that discontinuation threshold?
At some point, I agree, we have to establish some criteria for whether a project becomes a project. Not every idea has legitimacy to absorb resources to become a project in an organization.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you have skilled managers, whether you have a well-established project selection criteria or not, somewhere along the line, somebody has to say, yes, this is a project, and no, we're not doing that project. Now, that's based on the current conditions that exist in the organization at the time. So let's go back 3 years. Years ago, net present value was probably one of the top conditions to select or reject a project. And while some may be concerned with payback period, mm-hmm. The amount of time it takes to recoup your investment, that was probably not very important to people 3 years ago.
Okay.
In the current situation, things may be reversed. Credit is very tight. Expansion is very low. And probably the numbers are reversed. So at this point in time, if I was a financial manager or senior manager, I might suggest that payback period is probably one of the primary metrics, since the cost of capital is so high and capital markets are so tight. And net present value, while still important, takes a lesser weight. So as the economic situation changes, we adjust the criteria by which we would select projects.
Okay.
As we review existing projects, what I generally recommend is existing projects should be reviewed as if they were brand new.
Oh, okay.
So, for example, one of the common concepts that certainly use at PMP and our other project managers out there are familiar with is the idea of sunk costs. When you're halfway through a project, the money you've already spent is gone. It's spent. It's never to return. If we look at a project today and look at it going forward, we have to determine whether, if we spend more money in continuing the project, will it obtain the benefits that we want it to obtain? So we ignore sunk costs when we review a particular project as to determine whether it should continue or not. And we simply look at, in today's world, based on today's market, do we want to continue this project, or is it better to abandon this project and put our valuable resources in a new one? So I generally look at the identical criteria we would use today to select a new project is the one that I would select to determine whether another project should continue.
All right. Okay. Well, shifting topics a little bit, since I've now spent a lot of time on rebalancing the portfolio.
All right.
You mentioned in your book unbudgeted activities that can be damaging to a project. And I know before we started the interview, you and I had a chance to talk, and I have found this to be very prevalent with the organizations that I work with. Would you provide us with some examples of unbudgeted activities? And then suggest some ways that executives and managers can identify these prior to authorizing a project so that they can have a better feel for the true costs of their initiatives and then therefore be better prepared for them going forward.
Right. And I think you and I share the concern. As I lead seminars in project management and portfolio management with executives, I frequently come across the philosophy that internal resources are free,
mm-hmm.
and aren't included in project budgets. So, for example, we're doing an IT, if you're doing an IT project, and you look at the budget for an IT project, you'll find the cost of the servers there, you'll find the cost of the software there. But the cost of the training, the cost of the analysts who are being used to determine what servers should do, how to get them installed, all the internal costs are conspicuously missing.
Yes.
And you ask managers about this, and I have literally had managers come up to me and say, well, you know, we're paying their salary anyway, so it doesn't matter what I have them do. They're essentially free. Seriously, I find this quite shocking. What it essentially says is, okay, I can have a $120,000 engineer cleaning garbage pails because it doesn't matter what I have him do. We're paying his salary anyway.
Yes. Oh, yes.
There are two significant problems that actually come out of this practice. And one is strategic, and the other one is tactical. And I personally think the tactical one is potentially worse. The strategic one is it grossly distorts the actual true cost of the project. So if I look at projects as a value strategy and as a value perspective, and I look at them as a capital investment, I want to know their true cost to determine whether this project is actually going to give me the value that I expect. So by leaving out these salaries, it's like telling Donald Trump to sign a contract to build a building based strictly on the cost of the steel and concrete.
Yes.
As if you don't have to have to pay any contractors, which, you know, Donald would never do.
Yeah.
The second aspect is tactical, and what I think that's worse. What it basically says is, I don't care what resources I use, I don't get charged for them, so I'm going to go get the best ones I can.
Mm-hmm.
And the very politically savvy and the powerfully connected project managers are going to get the best project or best people. The less politically connected ones are going to be injured because they're going to have their people stolen from them.
Yes.
So, some activities are time critical. Some are quality critical. Some are cost critical. Some are highly risky. Some have low risk. Project managers are very savvy in identifying what people to put on what activities at what time. And the cost of that is a critical aspect of that decision. So, yeah, I find this quite a remarkable practice. One of the key aspects I use to determine the maturity of a project environment is whether they include their internal costs in their budgets.
Ah. Okay. Well, that's great. I hadn't thought of using that before, but that is a great criteria. Mike, there was another aspect or a concept in the book, and this one has to do with having work of day labor and consultants, which to me appeared to be temporary staff. So individuals whose skills are very similar to folks that already work within the organization, and these people are brought in to make up the labor shortfalls that exist within the organization today.
Right.
My question focuses on a different group of folks. This group of folks are typically referred to as consultants. I like to think of them often as trusted advisors, folks that are going to be engaged for some very specific knowledge, insights, skills that they have, but that are not resident within the organization. And in some cases, these trusted advisors are going to help manage the organization's projects. I was wondering if you could give us insights and your experiences on how best to work with these kinds of consultants or, again, as I call them, trusted advisors.
I like the term, Nathan. I think it's an excellent term. As we look at not just projects, but project management, the portfolio, the strategic plan, there is a large set of skills that the organization needs to employ in order to successfully bring that strategic plan into fruition. Now, certainly some of these are going to exist in-house, but as an organization, especially one that's trying to grow, as they expand their portfolio, as they expand their skill set, one can't just bring in and hire somebody, use them part-time, and then have them sit around doing nothing the rest of the time. So if we take a look at, let's take a look at the plight of the poor functional manager. And functional managers have a much more difficult job than most senior managers and project managers realize.
Yes.
If we look at the resource loading, functional managers need to provide resources for really two kinds of work that go on in the organization. They need to provide resources for the normal, standard, routine, ongoing operational work that occurs within the department.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have to provide resources for the project management work that goes on in their department. Now, if we look at the resource loading of the operational work, this is routine work. This is stuff they do every day. This is the normal activities that go on in the department. The resource loading is going to be relatively flat over time. Well, you might get seasonal bumps or that kind of thing, but for the most part, it's going to be relatively flat. Now, if we add in project work, what you're going to see is a lot of peaks and valleys. You're going to have periods where there's extremely high workload, and there's going to be periods where there's extremely low workload. And functional managers have to be able to provide resources for that as well. So what happens? Well, they can't just hire and fire as these peaks and valleys come up.
Sure.
So what do? There's a couple of ways of handling it. One of the ways I like is I just kind of draw a line down the middle, so right between the middle of the peaks and valleys. Well, as we hit a peak, for example, we obviously have more work than we have people for, and here's where we can bring in outside help.
Mm-hmm.
There are three real areas we can do that in, and one of the areas is if the kind of work we're doing is relatively unsophisticated or we happen to be skilled in that area, what I can do is I can bring in people at doing the routine work at the operations side.
Sure.
This is, as I indicated, routine work, and the people who do this are relatively inexpensive and relatively available. And I then take my people who would be doing that and I move them up to the project.
Mm-hmm.
The next approach is, all right, we can hire in at the project level instead of doing the routine work. When would I do that? I would do that when I need particular skills. So if I'm developing a new technology, I have a new innovation I'm trying to get in, and my people may be okay, but I really want to bring in some hotshot experts.
Yes.
Here's where I would bring them in at the project level. Now let's kick this up one more notch.
Okay.
As a project management professional, as you are, and as I am, one of the things that we are skilled at is knowing and understanding these kinds of concepts. For example, another approach in the book is the concept of the work package. And if a work package is done right, a work package is a unit of work done in a project that produces a well-defined result. Well, if this is done right, we can actually just outsource this for a fixed price, therefore also providing balance.
Yes.
To the resources.
Mm-hmm.
So as we look at expanding our portfolios, when we look at expanding our projects, understanding where to bring in our experts, where to bring in those folk that can provide and add value becomes critical. And I feel, and I'm sure you do as well, one of the key concepts of the book is that every project must add value to the organization. Every consultant must add value to the organization, which you wonderfully termed trusted advisors. Finding the right person, finding the right people who can provide you those skill sets, not only at the project level, but at the strategic level, can be a significant increase in your productivity as an organization.
Absolutely. Yes. Michael, before we close, I did want to ask you one other question.
Sure.
And this one is about your website, which is www.allybusiness.com. And it provides just a wealth of additional information on not just project management, but a whole host of other topics. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the website and its resources.
Sure. What you will find there is, as I indicated, we do not just specialize in project management, but also in business process management, as they must all integrate, as well as the innovation side, the research side. I am also aligned with several experts, especially in the area of finance. One of them actually helped me with significant parts of the book, and you will find his bio there as well. And you will also find there a variety of seminars in all of those areas, in financial process and project management. And I'm actually planning a minor overhaul of the website, which should be out in a couple weeks, and where we're going to be expanding into providing specific seminars and speeches designed for executives trying to get the most out of their projects as a result of the book. So that should be out fairly shortly.
Oh, great, great. And in the article accompanying this podcast, we'll also put links to your website so that our listeners can just have one click to get there.
Excellent.
So that'll be great.
You'll also find me on, I've now stumbled into social networking under extreme pressure.
Okay.
So I'm now Twittering, linking in.
Okay.
And blogging. So we will have all of those up and running.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Well, of course, you're always welcome to come and post comments on the strategy-driven website. And I'll have to look you up on LinkedIn because I'm out there on LinkedIn as well.
Well, excellent. I keep an eye on that because I actually, when I'm developing new models and new theories, I'll actually post them on LinkedIn and look for support and ideas and concepts. So keep an eye on out there. There's actually going to be a couple coming. I've been playing with new models of the organizational value statements out there. So
excellent. Yeah. Well,
keep an eye on it and please participate.
Yeah. Excellent. I will keep an eye out. Thank you. Thank you. Well, Mike, I want to thank you not just for sharing your time with us tonight, but also the insights on executive project and portfolio management. I loved your book, A Manager's Guide to Project Management, not only because of the insight that you shared in the book, but because of the richness of the examples that you provided throughout the book that really brought to life the concepts that you were discussing. Not only do I highly recommend that our listeners go out and pick up a copy of A Manager's Guide to Project Management, but, you know, I hope they'll take it back and they'll implement your best practices to help improve on their organizational alignment and accountability, which I know from experience is going to lead to just far superior results. So, Mike, thank you for joining me on the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Thank you, Nathan. It was a true pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Michael Bender for being with us today and sharing his insights on using best project and portfolio management practices to enhance organizational alignment. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Michael Bender and A Manager's Guide to Project Management at www.allybusiness.com. Until next time, so long.